This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, Sharp Money. It is VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. We open up another week as week zero is in the rear view. We just talked about it before we came on live here. Dogs 5-2 ATS in the FBS. You had 4-3 to the under. FCS goes 3-0 to the under. Just a little something to snack on as we say hi. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. The boys, Amal Shah back. Good to have Amal back. Amal Shah, hi, how you doing?
Doing well. Ready to be back and can't wait for college football to get in full bloom here this weekend. I know Notre Dame's offense looked great, but other than that, it didn't seem like the games were that exciting outside of maybe UMass and New Mexico State for about three quarters.
Yeah, not really. Got games coming up on Thursday, Nebraska, Minnesota. Minnesota right now 7.5, so 7.5. Florida, Utah, 6.5. So the questions continue as far as the quarterback. However, last week, while you were gone, them all, that number dipped to 5, back up to 6.5. So we'll discuss that coming up in just a little bit as we kind of unfurl everything that transpired over the weekend. We do have the final starter in the NFL as we wait a couple of weeks now. Remember, a couple of weeks in between here, the final starter has been named of the 32. So we'll get to those. Before I introduce Dustin Sweetelson, I want to warn everybody. So get ready for some shtick. He is a Vegas guy. And there's a big distinction between Dustin and I, and Amal, you can tell me kind of where you fit in here. I had to get away from Vegas, not because I didn't love the people there, and it's a great city. It's just, it's not for me. Dustin Sweetelson, conversely, it's very much for him. All the accoutrement, everything that happens in Vegas that stays in Vegas, you understand what I'm saying? You know, just talking ass, talking to people, drunk people, like that's Dustin's scene. Circa was lit on Friday night and he took advantage of it. So I get a call early this morning. I lost my voice. His voice sounded great. Never heard his voice clearer, crystal clear. He could have done a broadcast for 20 straight hours. I say hi to him right before the show starts. He goes, "Hey man, what's going on?" Because he's putting on a show. He wants the creaky voice and the raspy voice from partying with Derek Stevens on Friday night and somebody named Smalls. He wants that to carry over to Monday to prove, badge of honor, I'm from Vegas now. So before we say hi to him, I just want to prepare you, Amal, for shtick to come. Dustin Sweetelson, how you doing? Welcome.
I'm not faking it. Like, this is genuinely how I sound. Everyone has commented.
See how ridiculous he sounds? No, sounds so ridiculous. It's so real. Annoying.
Yeah, I hear it's just jealousy because I was singing on my way here, and I got to tell you, this new voice and me singing, I'm leaving you two losers behind. I'm going to be famous.
So you're a broadcaster with a banged up voice, and the only thing that's good for it is rest, but you were bellowing at the top of your lungs on the way to do a broadcast to prepare for it.
I had to check out like what my range was. You don't know what your range is until you test it. So I found out in the car that I'm going to be a famous singer if my voice just stays like this.
Mamal, any take on this? Does it feel like a put on or does it feel legit?
You know, I'm kind of on the fence on this one. I called him this morning. I didn't know if he had just rolled off the rack. And he's like, yeah, my voice is kind of raspy. And I was like, what happened? He goes, a Friday night. And I'm like, I'm not buying a story that you lose your voice on a Friday night.
There was an EDM concert happening. I was unaware of how loud it was. And here's my deal. If I tell a joke to one group of people and it lands, I'm then going to go to like the next group of people and see if it lands. And if it lands there, then I know it works. And I'm going to go to another group and another group. And I didn't anticipate that it was so loud. And I was already like 8 drinks in that I was yelling the whole time.
Okay. Well, a good kickoff to college football, a good kickoff officially for Dustin Sweetelson and college football. Now I've got a creaky voice as we say that. he always says to me too, he always like, oh my gosh, I got so many stories from Friday night. He had no stories. He literally just hung out with people and drank. There was nothing that came from it. There was nothing groundbreaking that happened. He met people that he stalks on social. I mean, those were the stories. I met people, correct?
Yeah.
Nothing happened. Strip clubs.
But now there were coworkers involved. So like if I share some things, I think HR might email me and then I have to do, you know, sit down with them and I'm the one who would get in trouble with HR is the issue, so I'm just hoping I don't see the email.
Okay. Well, hopefully HR, that being college football, doesn't realize Sam Hartman's like 28 because he looked like it in his debut. Let's discuss it. A beatdown, Notre Dame in Dublin, Amal Shah of Navy. Navy in a bit of a transition. Coach K was there for like 16, 17 years. Bradbury in now as defensive coordinator the last 2 years. And that was a team that was going to throw the ball more. They have a new offensive coordinator, so they attempted 7 passes when they were behind the whole entire time. The midshipmen are mid when it comes to throwing the football and below. Notre Dame, just so much bigger, so much faster. Just the eyeball test was there. 20.5 was the closer. 49 total stays under. Of course, Notre Dame does cover. A nice start to the season for Hartman. 19 of 23, 266, 4 touchdown passes, which ties a school record. So a good little start. 8 different players caught a ball off of Hartman. You like to see that as they get in the mix. Jaden Thomas had 4 for 78. Nice start for Notre Dame. Remember, Maul, they started 0-2 last year.
Yeah, I'll tell you what was most impressive. This team scores 5 touchdowns in their first 5 possessions to start this ball game. Really a dominant performance. You hadn't seen anything like that from Notre Dame in 20-plus years. Really a great job by the Irish in this one. Patrick, we talked about this before the season started. Sam Hartman, to me, is the best transfer in college football this year. Last year it was Caleb Williams. He wins a Heisman Trophy. And I don't want to overreact based on a performance against the Naval Academy, but my point being is that Hartman's mobility along with his accuracy is something that Notre Dame has lacked for a long time when you think about quarterbacks. I don't know, maybe you got to go back all the way to Brady Quinn last time you had somebody that you really thought was competent there for them under center. I'm not sure where you come out on that, but I think this team's got an opportunity, and I'll tell you what, Ohio State's got question marks at quarterback. If they can knock off the Buckeyes when they play them in week 4, this is going to be a golden opportunity for this team to have a monster season. 10-2 or anything less than 9-3 is going to be an incredibly disappointing season, but I think 10-2, 11-1 is not out of reach potentially for this team.
Ran the ball well, totally agree. Offensive line kept them clean. Again, you're dealing with 230 guys up front for Navy defensively, so not necessarily a true test. It's a system that will give you problems. Generally, those teams that take on the academies mid-season, it's harder to prepare, pardon me, on a short week. So Notre Dame had the offseason to prepare. Navy just 169 total yards, big guy on offense. So you're concerned, if anything, about that Notre Dame front 7 and specifically in the interior. And they look pretty good against a Navy team that obviously just wants to run the football with that triple option.
Seeing if that helps. All right, sounds way better. So couple notes from this game. One, Sam Hartman's still only 14-1 to win the Heisman. And the deal with him, when I look at his Heisman candidacy, I think because of the national program, because of the exposure, because of what he's going to bring to this team, he doesn't need the big stats some of the other guys need. If he somehow can lead Notre Dame to the playoff, that puts him in the mix for the Heisman, right? That's one takeaway. The second takeaway I have is something I think we can apply to other teams coming up in week 1. Navy had a coach transition. And I think sometimes we either overestimate or don't really realize what that transition for a lot of these programs is like. And in Navy's case, I think we didn't, some of us who thought maybe like Navy could compete for a little bit, thought that the coaching transition would just be an automatic positive. We don't realize how much these new guys come in, how much turnover there is in the coaching staff, how much turnover there is on the roster, how many new things they're trying to implement. And a lot of times they just don't have the pieces to do whatever it is they want to do. So I wonder if there's a way we can translate to what we saw from from Navy in their first year with their new head coach into some of the first year head coaches taking over programs this week.
Anything on that, Amal?
It's going to be interesting. I think in Newberry's case here, it's a situation where they run this triple option. All 3 service academies do because the lack of time that the players have to be able to prepare and do other things. I personally don't think there's much you can take away from the first week against Notre Dame that you might be able to in other coaching situations in other places.
Well, no, the point is we were told that they wanted to pass, right? We were told that they wanted to pass the ball more this year, and it was very clear on the very first pass they threw, they were not going to be able to pass the ball like we were told they wanted to do.
Yeah, I think the big thing that stands out, and again, sometimes it comes across a little trite when we talk about the quarterback position, not just college, but obviously the pros. Sam Hartman, greater than Drew Pine. And we move on to week 1 officially for these 2 teams, right? Because Hartman is an adult. The 5-year starter at Wake, Amal, now playing at Notre Dame, where I'm guessing the workload as far as classes, not overwhelming. for Sam Hartman as he waits to get drafted in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round next year. So I would imagine the only thing he's concerned about is running that Notre Dame offense, and it looked like that on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe he takes that Matt Leinart ballroom dancing type of class, but I'm sure the graduate program at UND is pretty tough. But, you know, when you look at this team right now, they needed a quarterback. They've been lacking it for a long time. The question is, though, when they play more challenging teams, can their lines, and you mentioned it, Patrick, you're going up against 230-pound defensive linemen. Different dynamic when you're playing other teams. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Big year for Marcus Freeman, big year for the Irish, but they've got the quarterback that they need. I think there's probably 90% of the teams in college football, if they took on Sam Hartman, they would be so much better. You know, to me, we talk about Ohio State needing two potential new quarterbacks. They're competing. We'll see both of them play against Indiana. Hartman comes in to me. He's the starter there immediately. He goes to Michigan. He's better than J.J. McCarthy. I can't think of too many places in college football outside of Los Angeles at USC where Sam Hartman is not the immediate starter, or maybe at North Carolina with Drake May.
Totally agree. They got a pro. They got a pro playing quarterback. And he looked like, it's funny, I don't know if you guys watching the game, it just was watching with a friend, and she was like, he looks like an adult. He does not look like the rest of them. And that's Sam Hartman, who's played 5 years in college.
And his poise when he was under duress and under pressure, and how he used his legs to create lanes to throw the ball, and he never looked panicked. It was, you really saw the maturity on display.
Easy not to panic when the quarterback is as big as the defensive interior players for Navy. I think it's Hartman's like, yeah, that? Come on now. Now, we move on. A slow start for USC against a good Mountain West opponent in San Jose State. Plenty to unpack. Caleb Williams, of course, your favorite for the Heisman, and USC will discuss Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, it's coming up this Thursday, the updated NFL betting guide. Throughout the NFL preseason, the VSIN experts have been reevaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide will have picks from every on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, how to use the VSIN betting splits, football contest strategies. Of course, if you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, and previews, now is the time to become a VSIN Pro subscriber for as low as $19. Or save 50% off the monthly price with an annual subscription and bet smarter all year long. Sign up today, vsin.com/subscribe. It's vsin.com/subscribe. We're back here on a Monday. I'm Patrick Maher. Of course, I'm Amal Shaw. Dustin Sweetelson, this is Sharp Money as we welcome you in. You know, we talked about the most important news source for a lot of these colleges is go straight to the blogs. Go to the student-run blogs and the specific blogs that kind of surround a program. Inside USC is one that I follow for USC football, and they were talking about how accurate was that USC depth chart. So, you know, USC and Lincoln Riley, Amal, they released a depth chart last Wednesday ahead of Saturday's game at the Coliseum here against San Jose State. And they had, for example, Zachariah Branch, who we'll discuss as wide receiver 3. They had offensive linemen listed as starters that didn't play. So just to give you an idea of the gamesmanship, you're going into week 0, into week 1 with these college coaches and the organizations. Like, there's not, oftentimes you're going to be misled as far as these are just formalities. Coaches are throwing out depth charts to make people happy, but they're trying to keep things close to the vest. So I bring that up because you can't always believe what you read. And after a slow start, Caleb Williams and USC, a late touchdown by San Jose State, a little backdoor action, but 56-28 winner goes over the posted total. USC, San Jose State, of course, does cover the number. But the breakout star here was right down the road from you boys in high school. Zachariah Branch, Vegas and Bishop Gorman's own. He was listed as the third wide receiver. He's a freaking stud. He's not big. He's probably 5'11", but kickoff returns, punt returns, running the football, catching the football, 2 touchdowns, and they are loaded outside with weapons as well. So we can start there. Caleb, 4 touchdowns, 278, 18 of 25, didn't run the football, but a breakout star in Bishop Gorman's Zachariah Branch, Amal.
Yeah, his dad's the track coach over here at Bishop Gorman, and his brother Zion is on the defensive side of the ball for the Trojans, second-year player there. But he is going to be an absolute superstar. And I'll tell you, once he gets more and more comfortable with the speed of the collegiate game and what they expect out of him, he is going to be a tough, tough cover. I don't know in terms of when you look at him, you mentioned he's not going to jump off the page to you from a stature standpoint, but Patrick, the speed and quickness are elite. And I think that's what's going to be a difference maker with a quarterback like Caleb Williams, and especially on plays that break down, because there are not too many quarterbacks I've ever seen that have the ability to extend a play like Caleb Williams. And with a player like Branch, these guys are going to be a fantastic combination. But guys, for me, once again, the problem for the Trojans is on the defensive side of the ball. I know they win this game comfortably. Patrick, you mentioned it, San Jose State with the backdoor cover. But man, 7 yards per play running the 7 yards per rush attempt, excuse me, for the offense for San Jose State. I get that this team has been better under Brennan the last couple of years, but this is still San Jose State and you're still USC. And now when you start facing better competition, this team better get it together, or Alex Grinch better be out of a job soon, because these guys just are not going to compete against much better teams who have more qualified offenses. And when their offense gets slowed down a little bit, because they just don't get enough stops.
Yeah, you just nailed it. And it's not just defensively, but the big talk here, local papers, local blogs talking about the line of scrimmage for USC against San Jose State. Again, it's a respectable Mountain West team, but line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball, not great for USC. Now, again, you look at their schedule, they don't play anybody until October 14th when they go to Notre Dame, but there's cause for concern. USC had 43 players get at least 10 snaps on offense and defense against San Jose State. What does that tell you, boys? It tells you Lincoln Riley's like, we can beat this team. We got to figure out what we have. The spring wasn't enough. We know we're loaded at skill. That's what Riley does. We know we're okay. We're great in the backfield. We're great at wide receiver. We have an all-timer at quarterback. We're okay in the offensive front. Other than that, and okay is the operative word for the offensive front, Dustin. Other than that, USC's a big question mark.
Lincoln Riley, we all love him. I think we all agree, great offensive mind, right?
Yes.
Is he really a great head coach?
I don't know. His record says yes, but I'm not 100%.
Hasn't he made the playoff a couple times?
I don't think he has. Let me double check.
He made it once with Kyler Murray. They gave up 21 in about the first 3 minutes to Bama.
0-3 in the college football playoff. You're right. Three appearances. 0-3.
Three appearances in the playoff? Yes, he's a great coach. Absolutely.
It just feels like there's always one element missing from his teams. And by the way, it's always the same element. It's defense.
That's fair.
I feel like
that's fair. And he kept Alex Grinch. What is going on there? Which isn't a great decision.
Listen, this guy has been, you go to Washington State. The most points they yielded when he was the DC at Washington State was against Michigan State. That was their highest point total of the season in the bowl game against Wazoo. He gets pushed out of Ohio State after 1 year. At some point in time, somebody's got to look around and say, dude, this guy's just not as good as we think he is. And he's the common denominator when you look at the failures of Lincoln Riley's defense over the last couple of seasons. I don't disagree with you, Patrick, in terms of Lincoln Riley's done a tremendous job. But to me, the great coaches, they make a coordinator change when you need to step up. If you want to compete with Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson and these other programs, you've got to be elite on the defensive side of the ball. SC's not even close to being elite. If you look at some of these other teams, a Michigan or someone, if they were playing a team like San Jose State, do any of us feel like the Spartans would get to 20 points?
Here's what I would say. If you just brought up Michigan State, if Michigan State was given an option right now, Mel Tucker, Lincoln Riley, they're going to go Lincoln Riley. If Oklahoma were given an opportunity, Venables, or go back to Riley, they're going to go back to Riley. Like, if you're starting a program right now, I guess you could say there's some names out there. Obviously, Saban and Dabo and DeBoer is tremendous. There's plenty of names, but Riley's going to be on that short list, along with Heupel, who's at Tennessee, just because they do something more and better and more efficiently than anybody, and that's run an offense in an offensive era. So I agree with you, fellas. I agree completely that he does have a bugaboo and it's lack of focus on the defensive end. But his teams, as I just told you, played 43 guys that got at least 10 snaps on offense and defense and still beat a pretty good San Jose State team by 38?
28, but still, to your point, I don't disagree with what you're saying. I don't know, sometimes Lincoln Riley, his offenses are so elite, that I think sometimes he just feels like, hey, we can just outscore everybody. We don't actually even really theoretically have to worry about the defense. And I know this is not a big deal. They won the game comfortably. You mentioned a backdoor score by San Jose State to get the cover. It was a 35-point margin at that point before they scored. But when you start, look, USC and all these other teams that we reference with great coaches, they're not worried about 8 of their 12 games. They're worried about 3 to 4 games throughout the course of the season. Those are the games where you really have to step up and perform because the other guys have great players on the other side as well. And I think that's where the real challenge comes in.
That's fair. I would say this about Venables. His offense was very good at Oklahoma last year. His defense was terrible. And he was known as literally maybe the best defensive mind on the planet. Now it's year one. Let's see what happens in year two, to be fair to Venables. But go ahead, big guy.
But with USC, if you go back, Lincoln Riley, every year will always have a loss or two. You're like, how does that happen? And I think the way the schedule shakes out for USC this year, you could probably find one or two of these games. Like you go back last year, loses to Utah at the end of the year. It was a massive loss for them. Baylor and Oklahoma State in 21. And then he's got a record of losing to K-State and Iowa State a bunch. Did it in 2020. Did it in 2019. Believe he did it in 2017. Lost to Iowa State as well.
Yep.
With the way the USC schedule is, you are at Notre Dame. Then you have to take on a physical Utah. Then you host Washington. And then you have to go to Oregon and close with UCLA. The odds to me of this USC squad stubbing their toe at some point, once if not twice, feels like a likelihood based on the defense we saw in week one.
Just real quick.
And it is year two. So yes. just he's still kind of setting the idea of what a Lincoln Riley program is, but go ahead, Amal.
No, real quick to Dustin's point. I think the one concern when you look at the schedule, Patrick, you brought up a great point. They don't have any games until October 14th. Even as competitive as Arizona could be, they're not going to beat the Trojans. But then you have Notre Dame. You've got Washington. You've got Oregon. There's one other game they have on the schedule, UCLA. I forgot about Utah as well.
It's the back-to-back aspect that I think is bad for them.
Well, it's not just that. My problem is if let's say they drop the game in South Bend, Do the wheels potentially come off for this team at some point in time during the season when the expectation is the college football playoff? I don't know what they're talking about in Los Angeles, Patrick, but maybe they're saying national championship. I just don't see it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'll say this, and I think I'm overvaluing Riley, and I think you guys are probably right as far as where he ranks as a head coach. I'm a South Carolina alum. If they had an opportunity to get Riley, I would drive Beamer to the realtor and help him sell the house. And then I would drive back to Los Angeles and drive Riley to Columbia, South Carolina to let him coach the team. That's just where I'm at with Riley. Just an innovator and a difference maker. So USC, slow start. Williams, 4 touchdown passes. He's fine. When we come back, big news out of the NFL as far as the starting quarterback. We'll get to that next here at Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, check out the splits, the betting splits over at VSIN.com. Money and bets for every game, updated every 10 minutes, straight from DraftKings, today's games and future events as well, only at VSIN.com, part of the package. So check out the betting splits. Most importantly, during the football season, trust me, you're just going to minimize, bring it back. The betting splits have to be along for the ride, I assure you. Okay, we got you back. Just a couple of quick things. We've got big news out of the Cardinal camp, and that is Arizona. Remember, week one at the Commanders. The Commanders are laying a touchdown 7, so it'll be interesting. We do have quarterback news, which I'll get to in a second, just to kind of put a bow on week 7. A couple of things. One, Ohio is going to cruise at San Diego. Again, it's not bitterness because I took the 3 with Ohio, but if Rourke doesn't get hurt, he stays healthy, they were going to be just fine. They drove the ball down the field on their first drive, settled for a field goal, but that was the difference there. UMass wins a game and drops 41 points, which is fascinating. Great job by the big guy. The quote-unquote sharps were all over UTEP as Jacksonville State takes a step up from FCS to FBS and beats them. Now, they're going to have to run the ball because I don't know about you, Dustin, but I wasn't overly interested in seeing Zion Webb throw the football, but a win is a win nonetheless. La Tech, Bachmeier took a while to get going against an FIU team. Somehow they made that defense look good. FIU couldn't do anything offensively. Terrible job by me on the over. Hawaii, I'll just say this, and then I'll let you guys run with any random observations from week zero. I think you got to upgrade Hawaii specifically defensively. Held Vandy to 39 rush yards on the road. Pretty good showing for Chang's defensive side of the football, and 28 on the offense. So maybe a little upgrade as far as the power rankings in Hawaii, but a win for Vandy nonetheless. Certainly don't cover the 17 at 35-28. That's what I had written down, boys. Anything from the two of you week zero?
I think Cordero is going to be pretty solid a quarterback for the San Jose State Spartans. I think, as you alluded to earlier, it could be a middle of the pack team in the in the Mountain West. You mentioned it, though. Mike McIntyre's team, Florida International, struggling, especially in the passing game, guys. Anemic. They go 5-for-14 throwing the football. Not going to win too many football games at this level. Grayson James was terrible in that game for a whopping 4 yards. What's more impressive is you have more completions than yards.
It's not great. Also, the Aztecs are going to have a long year at quarterback because they're playing the safety from last year at quarterback. They could just not throw the football. The defense looked better than I suspected in San Diego State because they lost most of their front seven. But again, a lot of that was with Rourke on the bench for Ohio, big guy.
Yeah, that bet hurt a lot because Rourke marched down the field. They end up with a field goal, but you feel kind of good about it. And then as soon as he went down on the hit and he grabbed his leg, you just knew that there was – I haven't even seen a report on what his injury was, if it was his ACL again, or they're just being, you know, cautious with him. But once he was out of the game, they brought in Harris, and Harris just, he couldn't move the ball in the air. He just was not accurate enough and not able to make any plays. That bet hurt a lot. The Jacksonville State bet was interesting because at one point I thought maybe Rich Rod had a bet on UTEP because with four minutes to go and needing to ice the game, he decided to bring his backup quarterback in, who is slower than Zion Webb, his seventh-year starter, and he let the backup quarterback run the ball 3 times. No, not hand the ball off 4 runs. The backup quarterback, who was slower, ran the ball 3 times, and they punted away and then needed their defense to come up with a stop to seal the game. But because of that game, Jonathan Von Tobel now owes me a steak dinner at Adiamo.
Wow. That's a pretty good look. By the way, UTEP, you know what that stands for, right? You take them points. And I'll tell you what, this team is going to struggle throughout the course of the season at times if they don't have consistency on the offensive side of the ball. Real quick, I want to go back to the Aztecs. You mentioned the Ohio game. If Rourke doesn't go down, you're right. The Bobcats probably win that football game. But I don't understand. What is the deal that goes on at San Diego State? Is the goal to win a football game 2-0 there? I mean, yes. This team has not had an offense in about 10 years. It's unbelievable. Ryan Lindley is their offensive coordinator. Yes. I mean, he couldn't play football when he was the quarterback there. Now you want him to be in the OC. I mean, it's just pathetic. This team has never had an offense. They've got to win every game based on a defensive performance.
So, fellas, I don't know where you're going week one as far as Survivor. Those that are getting involved, whether it's Circa or another Survivor contest, a lot of people are starting to focus on a team that you can use. You may not want to use them the rest of the year with essentially a rookie quarterback in the Commanders. But here comes the Cardinals, and right now that number is all the way up to Washington laying 7. Off the backbone, that is that defense, of course, and Arizona just decided to start selling last week. Now, incoming. This is breaking news here on Sharp Money and VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. The Cardinals say quarterback Colt McCoy has been released. So Clayton Tune or Joshua Dobbs, by the way, got there 10 minutes ago. The likely starter week one on the road against Washington. Kyler Murray with the knee is expected to remain on the PUP list to start the regular season, which means he will miss the first 4 games. Couple of things here. One, Kyler Murray will miss 4, and then whatever the difference is to 17. You're not going to see Kyler Murray this year. There's no reason. This is an absolute throwaway for the Cardinals. Secondly, Clayton Tune is ready. I know he threw a million touchdown passes in college. Totally different game. You saw it in the preseason with Clayton Tune. His head was on a freaking swivel. Thinking Clayton Tune's going to the Commanders in that defensive front and going to start. Ridiculous. They traded for Josh Dobbs because your guy, DTR, decided to turn into Joe Montana. So they trade for Dobbs, Amal Shaw, and if he's starting, that's a pretty quick turnaround to learn a system. And here we go off to Washington, but the Cardinals sell mode and they just released Colt McCoy.
No, you're absolutely right about that. Look, when you look at this team, hey, if there's going to be anybody who's going to learn an offense quickly, it's a guy who's a former aeronautical engineering major. I'll take my chances with him. But other than that, this team is in some serious trouble here. When you look at the quarterback position, you mentioned it. I mean, Clayton Tune, I don't care that you put up numbers in the American Conference at Houston. At the end of the day, I don't think he's a guy that can get it done. And Patrick, you're right. I think in week one in Survivor, I was looking at taking Minnesota, but I think Washington's going to be the play here. How many opportunities do you foresee taking this team with Sam Howell under center? This Arizona Cardinals team, guys, they're going to be tanking to get Caleb Williams. But here's my question, or potentially Drake May. What do you do with this Kyler Murray contract? How do you eventually get rid of it? Because it is such an albatross on the salary cap.
I know what you do. You do the Brock Osweiler. You get Caleb Williams. You get your quarterback of the future with that first pick. And then you're going to have to get a future first. Remember, they have two firsts next year. You can trade a future first down the road with Kyler Murray, NBA style, to get someone to take on the contract. That's how you get rid of it.
Here's what I will say about the Commanders in week one, and Samich was trying to push us off of it, Amal, as far as week one in the Survivor pool. I'll say this. We haven't had a situation like this. When I say we, I'm talking DC, DMV fans. They haven't had a situation like this since the Hogs were blocking for Mr. Rippon. Okay, seriously, Doug Williams was winning an MVP in the Super Bowl, and Joe Gibbs was a god, meaning there's going to be a home field advantage. The absolute disaster that was Daniel Snyder is on a yacht, and here comes a new ownership group. There's going to be vibes that are immaculate. And another thing, remember, Eric Bieniemy is going to be looking at the play sheet with one eye and looking at Ron Rivera with the other eye because he wants his job. And the only thing he's there is to show and prove in that offense. Jahan Dotson's a stud. I understand the McLaurin injury hurts, but you can, I think you both would agree, Howell looked very competent and very secure in himself in the preseason. Yes, disclaimer, it is the preseason, but the Cardinals are awful.
When we brought it up to Samich on Friday about using Washington week one, I thought we were slightly ahead of the curve. Following this move, I believe everyone should be on the Commanders and fading the Cardinals week one.
At least you had a revenge situation with Colt McCoy headed back to Washington, if you want to call it that. Yeah. I mean, it's probably going to be the most heavily used team because you can use a team like the Commanders and get it out of the way, maybe a free week, but the Cardinals are a mess right now.
You're absolutely right about that. I will tell you, though, I think some people will stay away from it thinking 50, 60% of the pool will be on Washington. But your decision should not be based on what other people are picking. It should be a decision that you make. You look at a team and you go, when the hell are you going to use Washington again?
That's the best point. It is fading Arizona is one aspect because you could probably do – you're going to try and do it almost every week this year when you can. The second aspect is you're going to have to use a lot of teams. When else are you using Washington? Like, what other game do you just feel like it's an absolute lock?
Well, to me, guys, there's three teams you could literally – that you would theoretically choose to use in week one.
Ravens, Commanders.
Correct. Yep. And the Minnesota Vikings.
Kirk Cousins in week one, though.
I'd take my chances against that thing that they call an offense in Tampa. And you have an opportunity there potentially, but you're absolutely right. A lot of it's the plays are not based on that week's matchup alone. But remember, you've got to use what? Is there 19 or 20 teams you have to use in this?
Something like that, because Christmas and Thanksgiving, I think, are their own weeks.
Yeah, so you've got 18 weeks plus two. So you've got to use 20 teams out of 32. So that's a lot of the pool you're using, 63% right there. So you need to figure out when you're going to use certain teams. And the Washington Commanders are a team that with a good win early could benefit you, but may not have an opportunity down the line. You know, we know things will change, but this is a team where it's hard to see too many situations where you can use them later on.
Well, you just absolutely crushed Dustin's spirit because on Friday he was talking about a sneaky Super Bowl run from the Bucks. Come on, Dustin. He was trying to convince you that's a good roster.
I said 8-1 to win the South.
All right, there it is. We're coming back. Joshua Perry, big college countdown.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
With the NFL season right around the corner, nonstop football action is in sight. You can get in on the action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Right now, new customers can bet just $5 and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Life's more fun when you're in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app before kickoff. Use the code SHARP Get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5 on any NFL bet, only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code SHARP. The crown is yours. See DraftKings.com/football for eligibility terms and responsibility. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. Okay, we got you back here on Sharp Money. I'm Patrick Maher, Amal Shah, Dustin Sweetelson, and our guy Joshua Perry, Big Ten College Countdown, NBC Sports Analyst. You can find him on Twitter at RIP_JEP. And we got to start here. My man did an amazing job on the NBC desk over the weekend. Congratulations, Joshua. That was a great start for you.
I definitely appreciate it. It was certainly a ton of fun. Like, I have been anticipating the start of college football, and I got in on the action early with some week zero coverage. So certainly looking forward to week one and beyond here, but it was fun to get back at it.
Patrick, why are you
the
surprised?
Buckeyes, Amal Shah, the Buck. Let me just say this because I'll say it for you, but we're surrounded by Buckeyes. My co-host Amal Shah went to Ohio State. Of course, Joshua Perry, Ohio State linebacker from 12 to 15, drafted in 16 by the Chargers. So Amal Shah, you're in good company.
Well, yeah, I was a little bit offended that you would even question to have such a great appearance there by Joshua Perry on that one. He's a Buckeye. Come on. I mean, look at it around the media landscape. It's Buckeyes everywhere, especially in college football.
We got a lot of guys out there representing for sure.
I'm sure Joshua was disheartened to hear that Michigan just had to suspend OC Mr. Moore for the first game of the year. Of course, Harbaugh suspended for the first three games of the year. Look, they can practice, they can coach with the team. They just can't be on the sidelines for those games. Of course, Moore, the OC game one, and then Harbaugh 1-3. Do you see an impact there, Joshua?
I think with Sharon Moore out, maybe a little bit more than I would have said before. Listen, though, I think this is something that probably galvanizes Michigan. This is a team that really follows the culture of their head coach specifically, but that coaching staff in general. And they've been able to refine it really well over the last couple of years. So I think if they're as mature as I believe them to be, this has zero impact. And if we're going to be completely honest about the opponent that they're playing, it's a East Carolina team that did a great job last year, 8-5, and certainly has built into it in the last couple of years. But they were 4-4 in conference. Starting quarterback from last year is going to be gone. Their top running back's gone. 2,000-yard receivers are gone, replacing like four of their back seven. It's not like you're getting a veteran group of five team coming in that's, you know, they're going to have edge and they're going to be motivated, but probably the best scenario to kind of navigate without your head coach. I think that this is a Michigan team that goes through there. And as long as they play hard and with maturity, I think they get the job done these first three games.
Yeah, JP, that's a great point you make. Holt Naylor's now with the Seattle Seahawks, and it's going to be a different situation. They're staying with Michigan for a minute here. Tell me your assessment of JJ McCarthy, because I think Corum and Edwards are the best combo in college football, but he seems like he might be the one issue for the Wolverines if they're going to win a national championship.
Yeah, I think he's got to refine his game. And he was wonderful last year. And specifically, there were some moments that make you say, wow, like this guy's got the potential to be a first round draft pick, but he doesn't play like that all the time. And I think part of it is what the coaching staff asks him to do. This is an old school team. They want to get in big personnel, you know, 12 personnel sometimes, really run the football with those two guys that you just mentioned earlier. And so there has to be an evolution. I think they have to give JJ a longer leash. As the quarterback of that team, I think JJ has to prove to them as well that he can handle it. Last time we saw him, I think that there were a lot of positives in his game. He also threw a couple of pick sixes. Those are the situations you can't have. The other part about this too is who emerges as the pass catchers. You know, Roman Wilson, I think he's a great player, still very unproven. He's got a lot of twitchiness to his game that I think can really break open. Colston Loveland is a young tight end for him that I think can be a really good player. And outside of that, you're kind of asking questions about who's going to be catching passes. And so I think it's a group effort. But as long as JJ developed this offseason, he could be one of the best quarterbacks in the country.
Joshua Perry joining us here, Sharp Money. Of course, NBC Sports. I'll let them all ask you about Ohio State. Let's go to Thursday and let's talk about Matt Rhule and Nebraska headed to Minnesota. Minnesota's a big time favorite, 7.5 here, Joshua. Uphill battle for Rhule there in Lincoln. Let me get your take on both teams, Nebraska and Minnesota here.
Well, Nebraska is an interesting case for me because I know a lot of people think that the cupboard was bare when Rule took over, and I disagree with that. I never thought their issue these last couple of years was talent. I thought their biggest issue was the fact that they made too many mistakes and critical points in the game, and I don't think that they were very well coached. And so the coaching aspect changes. Now it's about psychology for these players, and when things start to go wrong, do they say, oh, here we go, this is the same old stuff that we have been through, or do they say, listen, man, we're a new team, and we got new leadership, and we can go out there and get things together. I think they made a great move in the portal, getting Jeff Sims as their quarterback. Very explosive player. I think, again, another raw quarterback, but somebody that can really turn heads and open eyes if he can round out his game. And I think that's a great place to start. For Minnesota, they're going to be replacing a quarterback in Tanner Morgan with Ethan Kaliak-Manis, who had some snaps last year where he was able to show what he could do. Certainly the running back room for Minnesota has turned over, and that's where they've won a lot of games, and a little bit of movement on that offensive line as well. But this is an old school mentality team. They want to run the football. They want to play great defense. They value special teams, time of possession, things of that nature. They don't make a ton of mistakes. And I think that's probably going to be the biggest edge early on for Minnesota is as they work through some of the growing pains, they're not going to make a lot of mistakes through it. And I would give them the edge in this game.
Joshua, Buckeyes quarterback situation. Tell me what you've heard, what you expect to see on Saturday, because there's a potential both guys could play here. Kyle McCord out of Philadelphia, and of course, Devin Brown out of Utah. Both guys bring a different element. I don't know if you had a chance to see them up close. If you have, tell me what you think about the strengths of each of them.
Yeah, it's funny because every time I get asked this question, I feel like somebody's pulling the quote and they're putting it in an article somewhere. Like, I got the inside information. This is what I'll tell you. I have no idea where this battle's going. I have no idea what the final decision is going to be from Ryan Day. But my personal feeling on this is the longer that it's gone on, the more it starts to favor Brown. Because Kyle McCord's a guy who's been on campus for 3 years, and I think they've seen just about everything they need to see from him. Devin Brown was the guy that had more questions and whether he could take over this job. And it seems like he's put enough doubt in the mind of the coaching staff that they haven't made a decision yet. Kyle McCord is more of a traditional drop back quarterback, and he's got a really nice arm. He's a good decision maker. He's a guy who's going to go out there, and I think he's going to make all the plays to keep you on schedule. When I look at Devin Brown, he's got that youth to his game. So a little bit of that fearlessness that comes with the unknown of being a young quarterback. Maybe a little bit more mistake prone, but he's got a top end that's kind of ridiculous because he's a very good athlete and because he can get it into some windows that a lot of quarterbacks can't. So I think this is more of a preference. Do you want a guy who can get you out of trouble with his legs maybe a little bit more, specifically considering Ohio State's offensive line and how that's turned over compared to last year? Or do you want the guy, which Ryan Day has typically done, the guy who keeps you on schedule? And he's going to make wild plays, but when he's not making wild plays, he's not making bad plays. And I think that's going to be the balance that they're trying to find here.
It's a great answer. Joshua Perry, Big Ten, of course, NBC Sports analyst, joins us here on Sharp Money. We talked about Rule in Nebraska. Let's go Fickell and Madison in Wisconsin. Expectations, Joshua.
Yeah, Luke Fickell is a guy who I played for at Ohio State. He was our defensive coordinator and linebacker coach. I worked with him every day of my four-year career at Ohio State. Phenomenal coach, great guy. I think the moves that he has made to bring in a quarterback like Tanner Mordecai makes a ton of sense because the offense is evolving under Phil Longo into more of a wide-open offense. Now, people are talking about Longo being an air raid guy, and that may be true. I don't see them going full on air raid because they've got a great running back, a couple of them, but really Braylon Allen starting that thing off and an offensive line that has a culture and a legacy there at Wisconsin. You can also look at Phil Longo's track record at UNC, and he was pretty split, kind of balanced 50-50 on run and pass. And so I think that's a lot of what you're going to see, but it's going to be more open. Defensively, I think their personnel was in a good spot, a name for people to take note of. Mumajong Mehta, who plays linebacker, really, really good player, very disruptive, extremely intelligent. He's the kind of guy that you want leading you from the middle of the defense. I think this is a team that gets turned around pretty quick, and I'm excited to see what they look like this upcoming season.
Joshua, we have about 30 seconds. December 2nd in Indianapolis, which team wins the Big Ten?
Oh, man, that's a great question. It's hard for me to bet against Michigan right now, and I know that hurts as a Buckeye, but they're the team that's done it the last couple years, and I think they've got the makings to do it again. Very veteran, experienced team.
Joshua, that was awesome. You're going to be a star, man. At RIP underscore JEP, you can check him out. Big Ten College Countdown, NBC Sports Peacock. Also co-host of The Rally on Bally Sports. Joshua, thank you, buddy. Enjoy the season. We'll talk to you throughout.
All right. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
Okay. That's a good representation of a Buckeye, is what I would say. You did well there, Amal Shaw. That's part of your team, and he did a great job. I'll give you credit for it. When we return, we've got a starter named in Houston and a big-time trade in the NFL as far as the quarterback's concerned. We'll discuss coming back. Sharp Money.